Welcome back to the GCN Racing News Show. Coming up this week, SD Works and Lorena Vibes dominate the opening stages of the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift. Evenepoel sets record in Spain, and Wout van Aert takes 4 wins in 5 days in Denmark. I'll be looking back at all of those, as well as why Paula Blassi is being deliberately held back at the Tour by her own team UAE. Plus, the official transfer window has opened, so I'll be talking through the big name movers. This week in the world of racing, we learned that Tadej Pogačar is racing La Vuelta this year. He confirmed that this morning, that he'll be on the start line in Monaco in just under 3 weeks' time. He will, of course, start as the big favourite for the race, possibly the biggest favourite a Grand Tour has ever had. We also learned that Tour Vagn's own Nielsen didn't have the best of days on Friday. Not only did he crash in the Tour of Denmark, fracturing his hip in the process, he then lost a pair of shades.
Super guilty for that, guys.
But I haven't seen it, so yeah, okay. you will give him, and I wish him a speedy recovery.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Good luck, boys.
I love that. Well done to Visma and get well soon, Tour. Sticking with Visma Lisa Bike, we also learned that Fabio Jakobsen is supposed to be joining them on a mid-season transfer from Picnic Post NL. This was reported this morning again by respected journalist Raymond Kirkos on cyclingflash.com. Still just 29 years of age, Jakobsen has been far from his best in recent years, but perhaps a change of environment is exactly what he needs to get back towards his best. Interesting moves either way. We also learned this week that the winner of Amstel Gold, La Vuelta, the Tour of the Pyrenees, and the Vuelta a Catalunya this year is not one of the team leaders for the Tour de France. And I am, of course, talking about Paula Blassi of UAE Team Limad, who's been told in no uncertain terms she's there to help Elisa Longo-Borghini and Dominika Vlahovic. More on that later on. And finally this week, we learned that Lorena Vibes is still streaks ahead of everyone when it comes to sprint finishes, but also on punchy, climby finishes. So the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift kicked off on Saturday with a rolling stage that finished on a 2K 4%-ish climb. A climb selective enough that only 10 riders finished on the same time as the winner, whilst behind there were significant gaps. And I think that in itself just goes to show how strong Lorena Vibes is right now. Not only was she able to hang on to those other riders when other supposedly better climbers couldn't, she still had enough left in the tank at the end of that stage to unleash a potent sprint. Kim Lecourt-Pinard finished in second on the day, but it wasn't exactly close. The other names that Vibes beat tell you all you need to know, really, about how tough that finish was on stage one. Vollering, Pietzer, Ruig, Longo-Borghini, Ferron-Prevot, Cobau and Reusser. All absolute hitters. And it also goes to show just how versatile Vibes has become. It's not just on the pan flat stages or races that she wins these days. In part, that was also the case, actually, yesterday for stage two. Now, the finish there was much flatter, but the rest of the stage certainly wasn't. 5 categorised climbs, 1,800 metres of elevation gain, which provided plenty of opportunity for attacks, and to be fair, we did get quite a few. Célia Jarry was the first big name to make a move for FDJ Suez. The French champion drew out a strong group at that point that would have been even stronger had they actually worked well with each other. As it was, they didn't, and they were caught. Soon after they were caught, though, Rhianna Marcus of Lidl Trek made her own move, but unfortunately, nobody went with her. And that was a real shame because she really made it hard for SD Works to control things, and had she had a bit of help, there's a distinct possibility the brake would have contested the stage win yesterday. That wasn't the case, though, and Marcus got caught almost in sight of the finish line. And it wasn't much after she caught sight of the finish line that Lorena Vibes launched her sprint. Now, it looked like she might not have much room to move in the finale there with the way that the group was shaped, but as soon as she found a gap, she launched herself through it. Now, that was at over 250 metres to go, and by the time she crossed the finish line, she must have been close to 10 bike lengths clear of Elisa Balsamo in second. That is just ridiculous. These are the best races in the world. This is the biggest bike race in the world, and she's that much further ahead than anybody else. That said, it does make you a little frustrated sometimes at how other teams ride. If Vibes is in with a sniff of the win, 99% of the time she's going to take it, perhaps even more than that. So why not throw everything at trying to get away on a hilly stage, even if you have a sprinter? I mean, that's what Lidl Trek did yesterday. They got second with Bausma on the stage, but they made the race with Marcus and Amanda Spratt before her. And it's going to be interesting to see actually how things pan out on today's stage. It's a flat finish, but a very hilly start. In fact, the first climb today is apparently the second longest of the entire 9-day race after Mont Ventoux. So in theory, there should be a lot of aggression near the start, but we'll see if it pans out that way. Anyway, Vives leads the GC, of course, after two stage wins from two, 14 seconds over Kim Lecourt-Pinard, with Vollering in third. Vives also leads the points classification, obviously, by a huge margin, though. Her 111 points put her 81 clear of Lecourt and Balsamo. OCR Mahé of Maputi-Tondreprise leads the QOM competition, whilst the best young rider is Paola Blassi. Now, in our preview show of the Tour de France Femme, I said that I thought Blassi would be a co-leader at UAE with Longo Borghini. And looking back, that was slightly unfair on Vlahovic, who was fourth overall at this race last year, and who's had a solid season so far in 2026. However, to not have Blassi as a leader seems a bit silly, to be honest. Yes, Longo Borghini and Vlahovic deserve their status within that team. They've earned it, and they are world-class bike riders. But Blassi has been the team's standout rider so far this season. In fact, she's been the standout rider of the entire peloton, to be honest, when it comes to expectations versus reality. Her results this year alone are more than enough to warrant being a co-team leader there. However, at the start of the race, Blassi revealed to the media that the team had decided on their plan and that that plan involved her working for others and not for herself. And speaking to the Indewire podcast at the race start, Blassi even went as far as to say that she wouldn't be able to compete in the time trial or go for stage wins. Now, I presume that she meant there that she'd been told not to go flat out in the time trial so she can save her energy for the job that she'll have to do later for her teammates. But it's hard to hold a rider back if she wants to go flat out. To be fair to Blassi, though, she seems to have taken it all in her stride, taken the news quite well, in fact. She hasn't complained, and she said that she's happy to follow the team's instructions and that her team leaders do deserve the support. However, if I was her, I'd be quite angry. She deserves her shot at the podium, which I think most people think she's capable of, given what we've seen so far this year. So why isn't she being given a leadership position within UAE? Well, the team's going to tell you that it's always been the plan. But there's also the very strong rumour that Blassi is moving teams at the end of this season. So her current contract with UAE runs through to the end of 2027, so next year. But according to reports, the buyout clause in that contract is only €100,000. And there's a good reason it's so low. Blassi was a fairly unknown rider when the team signed her at the start of last year, and nobody's crystal ball could possibly have predicted the success she's had already this season. Where is she off to? Movistar, apparently, a Spanish team for a Spanish rider, and one that's been enormously successful on the women's side in recent years. Now, if you are new to pro cycling, you might be wondering why on earth a team that's losing one of their star riders isn't trying to get every last big result they can out of them before they leave the team. Well, that would make complete sense, wouldn't it? But then traditionally in pro cycling, it's kind of the opposite of what has happened. Often, when a team gets wind of a rider leaving, they don't even select that rider for the biggest races. So from that point of view, I guess Blassi can count herself lucky she's even getting to the race at the Tour de France at all. And it's another illustration of how backward the sport can be. And with contracts seemingly being signed earlier and earlier each year, there is the risk that riders could lose almost entire seasons if they're sidelined by their current team ahead of moving to a new one. Anyway, you can let me know your thoughts on this. Perhaps you think the team have made the correct decision on this front, investing in the leaders that they know will be with them for the long term, or maybe you're part of the hashtag Free Blassi movement. You can let me know in the comments section just down below this video. As I said before, the race continues today with an interesting looking stage, which is very unpredictable, whilst tomorrow is the only individual time trial of the race, so we'll have a good indication then of who's hot and who's not this year. I'll be wrapping up the finale of the race on the show this time next week, so stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, Remco Evenepoel was busy setting records at the Classic of San Sebastian on Saturday, and he made it look relatively easy. At least he did after he managed to get back on after a puncture with about 50 kilometres to go. So the race jury on the day were feeling particularly strict, which meant he was forced to ride back to the group in the wind rather than drafting behind any team cars. And it took him some time, particularly with other teams driving things on the front over the climb that they were on at the time. He did get some help in the end from some teammates, notably Giulio Pellizzari, finally regaining contact with the lead group with a little over 30 kilometres of the race remaining. All of which only made his ride even more impressive on the day, really. So on the Merkhill Tontorra, the final climb of the race, he dropped everybody except for Richard Carapaz of EF, and he looked very comfortable whilst doing so, fully in control from bottom to top. Now, he made no attempt to get rid of Carapaz between there and the finish line. Evenepoel was clearly backing himself in the sprint, and he had every reason to do so. He had no problems at all in taking the win there, his fourth of the race from four participations, a new record. He is now going to take a bit of a break from racing, resuming in September in Canada with the two one-day races and then the World Championships, which are his big goal for the remaining part of this season. Right, I am going to move on now to the Tour of Denmark. Now, the headline from last week is that Wout van Aert is officially back. I mean, winning Paris-Roubaix and a stage of the Dauphiné was a decent indication, wasn't it? However, he won as many road races last week as he'd won in the previous 2 years. Not as prestigious, undoubtedly, but still. So he won the opening three stages of the Tour of Denmark, giving a 20-second buffer on GC with two stages remaining, more than enough to take the overall classification. The first of those final two stages was won by the break, with Storm Ingebrigtsen taking his second pro win, whilst the final stage was a brunt sprint won by Rasmus Søberg Pedersen, riding for the Danish national team. He's normally with AG2R or Decathlon, as they're known now. Okay, before I move on to other races, a reminder, we have still got all of our Grand Tour merchandise for sale over at shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com, or you can scan the QR code that should be on the screen now. The print collection has actually expanded slightly now to include this one from Spain. Thanks again for all your kind and positive feedback on the prints you've come out with this year. And if you'd like to send us a photo, in fact, of them in your house, which we can use on the GCN show, please upload it at globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader. Right, one other race to report on from last week. Natanael Tesfatzion of Movistar won the Circuit de Getxo in what was a small group sprint. There he got the better of Pau Mikel of Bahrain and Alex Aramburu of Cofidis. Okay, as mentioned at the top of the show, August the 1st marked the point at which teams and riders could officially announce their movements between teams, and we've had a couple of big names confirmed already. Firstly, Mikel Landa. So the 36-year-old spent the last few years at Soudal Quickstep, where he was brought in primarily to help Remco Evenepoel in the mountains, but he's since moved on, of course. Much of Landa's 3 years at the Belgian team was disrupted through injury, it's got to be said, but when he has had a clear run, he's still a force to be reckoned with on the climbs. And his new team, Euskaltel Euskadi, will be hoping he has a clear run when he rides for them over the coming two seasons. It actually means he's gone full circle in his career, because it was at that very team that he turned pro back in 2011. Alpecin Premier Tech actually announced three new riders in one go. Kasper van Uden from Picnic Poternel, Ivan Garcia Cortina from Movistar, and Mads Mikkels of EF. All very fast riders who are going to bolster Alpecin's sprint and classics heavy squad. Mauro Schmidt is moving to one of his home teams, Pinarello Q36.5, having spent the last few years with Jacob Alula. We know that the Pinarello team have lofty ambitions and deep pockets, so I've no doubt that Schmidt is the first of a few new signings they'll reveal in due course. Paul Seixas and Primoz Roglic have both been linked to that team in recent weeks. I'll finish with a rider who moved teams with immediate effect last week, Victor Langolotti. So the Monegasque rider is now with XDS Astana, switching over from net company Ineos. Now, with La Vuelta starting in Monaco in just a couple of weeks' time, many have speculated that net company were not intending to include him on their roster for that race, so he found a team that would allow him to race a Grand Tour on home roads. Okay, that is all for this week. Thanks again for watching, and I look forward to seeing you next Monday, where I'll wrap up the Tour de France Femmes avec Zwift, the Tour of Poland, and the Vuelta a Burgos. See you then.